Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Side 2, For the Record program number 743, Interview with Russ Baker. This program is being recorded on May 27th of the year 2011. Happy Memorial Day, everybody. Once again, it is my pleasure and privilege to bring back to our airwaves Russ Baker, the author of the consummately important landmark tome Family of Secrets, subtitled The Bush Dynasty, America's Invisible Government, and the Hidden History of the Last 50 Years, and also editor-in-chief of the Who, What, Why website. Russ, welcome back once again to our airwaves.
Thanks, Dave.
We were talking about what people can do. I know I've been doing this for a long time, and I get depressed sometimes. It really gets to me. If I was dispassionate about this stuff, I'd be watching American Idol I'd be engaged in the frivolity that Edith Wharton spoke about. But people do get depressed, and that's certainly very understandable. And yet, we're at that point in time. There've been so many different exhortations from patriots of various kinds, and I don't mean, the contemporary brand of jingoist patriots, but real patriots, the Thomas Jeffersons and others, about the need to get down to business when you have to get down to it. What would you suggest for the average person in the listening audience? What would you suggest that they do?
Well, actually, there are so many things you can do. This is the fascinating part of it. People say, well, what are the solutions? There are thousands and thousands of NGOs, non-governmental organizations, nonprofits, local community groups, and they are actually making a difference. They need more people to be involved in them, but they do make a difference. And then there are national organizations that make a difference or have ideas on how to make a difference. I'll just give you an example of something recently. I may misreference this. I think it's called UK Uncut, I want to say. And they've started a movement here in this country. And they basically, what they did was, it had been reported that a couple of big UK companies were not paying their taxes. And they thought, well, wait a minute, we're consumers of these products. And one of them was a big mobile phone company. And they went and they got a big crowd spontaneously with Twitter, start thinking about what you saw in Egypt. And they rallied in front of these phone stores. And the phone company didn't like it, and whoever was the big shareholder there had to deal with this having not paid the taxes. And this thing spread throughout Britain. The fact that that story is not a big story in the United States, that the media here are not telling us the story of how the British people have been rising up, is in itself extremely revealing. But they now have this Uncut, I want to say it's called. Maybe we can put something up on the Who, What, Why site with some more information on that. But they've got that going here now. And so you can just connect with a bunch of other people on whatever issue it is that matters to you. And if you organize and you get in their face, they do something about it. It's not that things don't change. It's that we don't understand where the problems are, and then we don't take any action. And it, the fact of the matter is, unless they want to explicitly change this country into an authoritarian or totalitarian country and rule us literally from the barrel of a gun, they still do have to respond. And if enough people storm a town meeting, overwhelming hundreds and thousands of them, the city council pretty much responds. And I think that that's true also on the federal level. I think that's also true with oil companies and the military industrial complex. If enough people are upset and are expressing it, they've got to find some way to deal with that anger.
Going to the website itself, and one of the things that I always encourage people to do as well is to use the media. One of the very few things that I see as a really optimistic development, although It has been used for intelligence purposes in a big way, and it actually had its origins with DARPA. But the internet itself, with the internet, the ability of people to collate, store, and transmit information is unprecedented. And people can, in a very real sense, become their own media. And I encourage people to basically take the information that they hear on this broadcast, take books like Family of Secrets, material from Who, What, Why, and the other sources that I access on this program, and spread the word. Use the internet, call talk shows, and Ideally, each citizen should make him or herself a node of information transfer, to coin a lofty, perhaps, sounding term. And I think that is step number one, because if you don't have the right information, you're not going to be able to act effectively. Your car breaks down, and let's say it's something to do with the transmission. Well, you could change the spark plugs, and that isn't going to get the car going. So you've got to have the right information. That gets back to what I think is the really subversive and, in some cases, criminal role of the media, literally covering up horrendous crimes and crimes that do terrible damage to the American people and to citizens around the world. And that brings us back to Family of Secrets and Who, What, Why, dedicated essentially to that same purpose, to penetrating what the Germans call Nachrichten, rending the night, which is their word for intelligence. You know?
Yeah, I mean, not a day goes by when I don't hear that some so-called ordinary person, retiree, or we have truck drivers and teachers, people who read Who, What, Why regularly, who have read Family of Secrets. People, doctors and lawyers and engineers and students working part-time jobs in fast food places. I meet all kinds of people in pizza parlors and so on, and they say, you know, wow, I read that book or I love that website. And they tell me stories of what they did. And they sent an email out to a bunch of people, and then people that they sent it to sent it on to other people, and then somebody scheduled a local event, and people began talking amongst themselves, and it created some new organization. Other people use Twitter, or they use Facebook, they're just so, you know, Reddit. There are so many of these things, and there are new things all the time. And it's kind of fun, actually. And the great thing about it is that you can kind of be sitting in the comfort of your home in your bathrobe and pushing a few buttons and really pushing knowledge out there into the world. And then people use that stuff. They use it at work over lunch in a discussion with a coworker, and they pull something out and they point to things and they change minds. And our problem in this country, really, is that it's not so much that we have to worry about what Obama does or something. It's that we need to first change minds among the people. The people need to know what's going on. And I think what we were discussing earlier about the obstacles I've seen with Family of Secrets, we can't even penetrate the audiences that, like Jon Stewart or Rachel Maddow or Keith Olbermann, they don't even know about any of this.
Yep. It is interesting how stratified the entire media establishment is, because they're viewed as alternative. Although if you're on the Comedy Channel, I don't know how alternative that is. These are major corporate interests that run these channels. But yeah, there's the right-wing media, then there's the so-called mainstream media, which really are right-wing media, past a point. And then there are the so-called progressive media, and then farther to the left you have, for example, Pacifica Radio. But there are very profound and, to a large extent, uniform discontinuities. There are things you don't talk about. And if you do talk about them, you're not going to talk about them there. You know?
Well, that's right. For example, in my research into the Bush family for Family of Secrets, I studied George W. Bush, and then I studied his father, George H. W. Bush. I came upon the indications that George H. W. Bush had another past, that it was not being discussed in the media. This was the real explanation of why he was made CIA director as a novice, supposedly, and it was about how he actually had been a very important player in covert U.S. intelligence and very sensitive and, I would say, illegal domestic operations over the years. This led me back to the story of his not remembering where he was the day that Kennedy was shot, my curiosity about that, and then spending several years trying to establish where the elder Bush was at the time Kennedy was shot, then getting into the whole Kennedy assassination thing, which was new to me, something I had no opinions on, no background in, spent a long time looking into that, and the result being four chapters of largely new information on the Kennedy assassination, changed my understanding of all that. that has apparently changed a lot of other people's understanding. Anyway, that story, we need to get that out to a larger audience. How do you do that? That's very, very tricky, because the New York Times basically seems to have a rule that they won't write about the Kennedy assassination at all. Now, how could you not write about one of the most seminal, most dramatic, most consequential events of our history? They don't, you know, 9/11, whatever you think about it, there's almost no discussion of another enormous event. Watergate, something I get into with several chapters of new information, astonishing to me and astonishing to readers, connecting Watergate to the Kennedy assassination and understanding that what we thought was going on and Richard Nixon's role in this was wrong, that these are crafted stories that are pushed out there. And so this kind of stuff, how do we? We need to all work together and strategize. How do we get these things into the New York Times? How do we get Jon Stewart to be willing to talk about a book like this or the kinds of stories we're doing on Who, What, Why? And so we all, I think, Dave, have to be part of this effort to kind of find some cracks in the facade of the establishment and begin to inject the truth.
I think a lot of this, if I'm understanding what you're saying, and not imposing my own views, basically it's going to have to go from the grassroots up. In other words, when, not necessarily the city council, but say when Jon Stewart or some of these people who occupy the mid-range of the media establishment, perhaps when they are petitioned, and consistently so, by their audience to begin talking about the Kennedy assassination or other things, although as a comedian he may be limited somewhat in that regard. The late Sam Kinison, not my favorite comedian, he actually had begun talking about the Warren Report before his death, so who knows. But I think that if people want to see more truth, they're going to have to take the bit in their mouths and run with it and basically put it in the faces of the people they want to be telling the truth. Because otherwise, referencing the Upton Sinclair quote, it's difficult to get them to do it when not understanding it or not doing it. Their job depends on that, particularly in our climate these days when certainly the economic waters are deep, turbulent, and perilous.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting because people are always saying to me, why, you know, you should be on Jon Stewart. You know, you should be on Oprah. You know, you should be on, and they name their favorite show as if it's my fault that this book hasn't been on there. But we have very good publicists and a high-quality publisher. I myself have a long track record in journalism and am known. So there aren't any clear obstacles there except that these shows, for whatever reason, were sent these books and chose not to contend with it at all. But I agree with you, Dave, that it is up to all of us when we think there's important information and we patronize some establishment. It's just like if you're a regular at a restaurant or a bar or anything else, if you tell them, you know, you really ought to think about such and such, the more important you are to them and the more of you who say to them you should do this, the more inclined they are to finally take action. It is the squeaky wheel syndrome. All of these shows and are dependent, of course, on audience satisfaction. And, I believe, actually, that these are mostly good people and that if they are presented with a petitioning, if you will, from enough people, they can go to their bosses and say, you know, I think we should do this because it's getting to the point where people are starting to wonder why we don't. They want us to do it. And maybe there's a delicate way that we can begin to kind of go into this material. And as I say, these are not bad folks. I think most of the people, the mainstream media, from New York Times to Washington Post to CBS to CNN, are basically good people who need to be they need the rest of us to supply them with, I think, the courage and the energy to go to the next level.
And I think, too, another factor and another motivation for doing exactly what we're talking about, basically people getting out and making some noise. Be polite, because if you act like a jerk, you're going to impress people in a negative way. But basically getting the word out and putting some gentle but firm pressure on those media outlets and individuals whom you would like to see doing this. And that is that at bottom, one of them, I'm going to fuse a synapse here. One of the academics, well known to students of the JFK assassination and someone who's, I understand, has been very supportive of your book is Professor Peter Dale Scott, the brilliant Berkeley professor. And he wrote, there was a volume that he co-edited back in 1976 called The Assassination's Dallas Palace and Beyond, which talked about some of the links between the Kennedy assassination and Watergate. But in the introduction to the book, or the foreword, he said that he had spoken to a number of mainstream political figures who had declined to run for office because they knew full well what had really happened to John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King, or others, and they feared for their safety if they pursued the agenda, the political agenda that they would like to pursue. And I think that that is one of the things that people have to understand. There have been media figures and other political figures that have bitten the farm. Regular listeners to this program will have just heard for the record 742 called Body Count. And there have been some very suspicious and to anybody with half a brain, obvious political murders in Alabama connected with what one astute blogger termed Karl Rove's Alabama and some of the political machinations down there. And some of these obvious killings have been called suicides, and it's just ludicrous. But the effect of that is what the late Jim Garrison, who investigated the Kennedy assassination as New Orleans DA, referred to as intimidation by induction. You know, people see this and they say, well, you know, maybe discretion's the better part of valor here. And beyond that, they fear for the safety of their families. If, however, a lot of people are talking about these things, it's not that easy to pull off some of this skullduggery. Remember the famous footage from Tiananmen Square where the kid is facing up to that tank. That tank could have squashed him at any moment, but because people were watching, the tank was trying to get out of the kid's way. And I think, in a sense, that might be something of an operational paradigm. If enough people make enough noise, it's not going to be that easy for the malefactors of great wealth, for the people who would direct the bullets or daggers or toxins or whatever in a strategic sense to do what they do. I think, again, Nachrichten and penetrating the dark and shedding light into areas that have illuminated. No, I'm not talking about the Illuminati, some of you wacko conspiracy guys out there. That is what we've got to do. You know, we've got to, people have got to understand that it's up to them. And it's not reasonable to expect the media figures, academicians, political figures, and others who, on the one hand, have the very real material rewards of cooperation in front of them and perhaps in their bank accounts, and who, on the other hand, have these very stark examples of what can happen as well. And so these are things that people need to pay attention to and become active in. And in a sense, they have to light the fire and fan the flames themselves.
Yeah, you know, what's amazing to me is that I often talk to people who are afraid to take the slightest risk of any kind. And all I can say is if you live your life like that, you know, afraid to say something to another individual, they're sitting somewhere and somebody's encroaching on their space and they won't say anything. You need to sort of practice courage. And when you start doing it, when very little is at stake, you build yourself, you become stronger and stronger so that when something very, very serious confronts you, you're able to protect yourself and your family and perhaps your country. And I think that's what we see, that our population is divided all along a line from those who won't do anything at all about anything and are terrified of their own shadow to those who are almost recklessly bold. And but I agree with you. I think that if more of us just start doing tiny little things, just little exercises in courage, and again, if you're not somebody who bothers to, you know, pick up a phone and call a show, or you're afraid to read a book because you think you can't sleep, or you've never forwarded an email, just start with these little tiny exercises and do those and see how that goes. And you're going to be gratified to see that people thank you, that people really appreciate it. They view you in a new light, and it can improve the quality of your own life, actually. And then you start saying, you know, this is kind of fun to be active, and it's kind of fun to study and learn new information and master these daunting mysteries. And people like this stuff. And I mean, as I say, it's been so gratifying to me, Family of Secrets, despite my not getting on so many of those major shows, is now a bestseller. And it sold a lot of books, and it's continuing. It's actually, the sales are almost growing because, again, of this grassroots kind of brush fire movement. And we're going to do the same thing with Who, What, Why. It's still small. It's fairly new. Most people have never heard heard of the site, but let's spread the word and let's grow it and let's let people know that there isn't just CNN and all those, how about all those websites with the celebrity gossip, that there are other things that you can go to.
Yeah, none of that, but with regard to reading specifically, the brain is not separate from the body. People keep their bodies in shape, they exercise, take care of themselves. The way you work out your brain is reading. It's part of the body. If you were to put a bullet through your brain, it's going to immediately and permanently affect all of the other systems of your body. The way you work out your brain is reading. It makes the brain stronger. It actually has a definite effect on health, on cognitive functions. Television is the opposite. It weakens the brain. It lowers attention span. So I think that people can look at it in that way, too. And certainly, if you want to really develop some cerebral muscles, Family of Secrets would be a really good initial training program, because it's a good, formidable read and a very necessary one. The program that I do is designed to sort of fill in that gap. I refer to myself as a journalistic step-up transformer. I take information that's on the public record and make it more public. Though certainly I'm never going to be on CBS or any of those, or Maydow or Jon Stewart or any of those. Yet there are people that affect things at that level who definitely listen, and the word gets around. Part of the problem, too, is our media template itself is structured for superficiality. It's a soundbite culture, and your book falls at the opposite end of the spectrum. It is weighty, and it deals with things in the depth that in which they need to be dealt. And it's important to avoid soundbites. So that's why I really appreciate your stretching out on those 6 hours last year. But that's what I think is required, so that even if people maybe are too busy to read the book now, at the very least, or people have heard bad things about it. I mean, there's one author in particular. I'm not going to mention his name, but I saw a review by a JFK assassination researcher, and it was a disparaging review, and if I hadn't read the book, I would have been hard-pressed to say that this was the same book I'd read. If people have heard disparaging comments, they can become acquainted at least superficially with the book through those six-hour interviews, and then they can take the next step, read the book, then begin accessing Who, What, Why website, and again, become the media. And I think that's a very important thing to do. Otherwise, you wind up belonging to the lie.
Media literacy is critically important because we all rely on guidance. You go online, if you're going to go out to do a special dinner, you go to those websites where you read people's reviews. If you're going traveling, you look at where people go on and give stars for hotels, but you don't even know those people, and you're hoping that you can divine who's got good taste and who's telling the truth. We do the same thing with the media, and so, for example, Family of Secrets was reviewed by the Washington Post, but I was struck by the fact that instead of having any of their eminently qualified staff members who cover the CIA, the presidency, and so on review it, they gave it to an outsider who is a satirist. And I was struck by that, and I obviously, you know, there's something wrong right there when there's an almost 600-page book about the President of the United States with 50 pages of footnotes, and you give it to a guy who writes novels to review it. They're telling you something about their paper and their role as establishment gatekeepers. And we had this with another paper, the Los Angeles Times, where an in-house person did a review. He was not the right person, actually, to review this. But he took off. He basically was upset. He essentially said, anyone who questions the official story on the JFK assassination does not deserve our consideration or respect. And I was struck by that because we know that a vast majority of the American people do not accept the traditional explanation. And yet there it was, and that was in that very big and important newspaper.
This is also an example of spin, because the fact of the matter is the Warren Commission itself, aside from the fact that it was fiction, the Warren Commission had no legal status whatsoever. It was a presidential fact-finding commission, but a special House Select Committee, even though itself, its own investigation was badly compromised, concluded that there had almost certainly been conspiracies behind the assassinations of John Kennedy and Martin Luther King, and they made recommendations recommendations to the Justice Department to, among other things, begin investigating David Ferry and the anti-Castro Cubans in New Orleans, and when, following the movie JFK, some of the committee's files became public, it turns out that the assistant counsel, I think he was, in charge of the New Orleans aspects of the investigation, concluded that Clay Shaw, who was the fellow who Garrison was investigating, was either one of the planners of or a cutout to the planners of the assassination, and yet even among JFK assassination researchers, Garrison is pilloried. But when somebody makes a statement like that, they're basically pillorying a congressional select committee and a lot of very significant people there. So it is not even consistent with our established political history.
What struck me in my work for Family of Secrets was when I began finding these connections between George H.W. Bush and key figures who are connected in some way to the events of November 22. None of that gets mentioned in this LA Times review. He just skips it. For example, he apparently either didn't read the book or he didn't think it was interesting that the same man who said he couldn't remember where he was on November 22 actually turns out to have been in Dallas. He doesn't find that interesting. He doesn't find it interesting that his lifelong friend, George de Morenschild, was the basically the father figure to Lee Harvey Oswald in Lee's apartment in his life, driving and eating together and so on a daily basis in the year before the assassination. And we have letters between Mr. Bush and George de Morenschild, and this is not interesting to the LA Times. And so you know, that's why really we need to say to people, please read this book, Family of Secrets. Please go to this website, whowhatwhy.com. Please judge it for yourself. If it seems like it's cockamamie, fine. But I can tell you, 90-some percent of what we understand of the people who read these things, look at the Amazon reviews there. We have almost 5 out of 5 solid stars from 130 people, random people who took the time to read it and post something.
One thing comes to mind. The LA Times is run by the very powerful, it used to be, now they believe they're owned by the Chicago Tribune, but it used to be run by the Chandler family. And one of the things you talk about in Family of Secrets was how the Chandler family apparently networked with Prescott Bush Sr. and helped to boost the candidacy of Richard Nixon.
So they were in business together in a military contracting company right at the moment that, and this is the secret history, yeah, that is in Family Secrets, that they actually selected an unknown Richard Nixon to run against a man who was a thorn in the side of Wall Street.
Mm-hmm. It may be this reviewer's disparaging stance toward your book may very well have been a case of a man's job depending on his not understanding, or at least not providing a favorable review to corrupt Upton Sinclair.
No idea why, but anyway, the key thing here is we do have some freedom still in this country. I was able to find a publisher for Family of Secrets. They got behind it. I had an agent. We had publicists, and we have been on shows. We've been on with Dave Emery, I think critically important because of, Dave, your unique understanding of American history. But we've all actually been on hundreds of shows now around the country that have had the guts to do this. And so, no, we haven't broken through into the mainstream media. But again, I think that's coming. And I think that this is going to be transformative when all of the people who listen to this and who read Family of Secrets, go to our website, Who, What, Why, become part of this movement. We're going to bust out, folks, and we are going to make a difference, and we are going to see things change. I really do believe that.
Let's hope so. And certainly, I think we're in a position now where we really don't have any choice. We are up against it. And if we do not correct the course of the ship of state, we're all going to basically be treading water. Things are right up against it. And again, the quote from Mort Saul, one of my role models, one of the people who spurred me to do what I do: how many lies can you allow yourself to believe before you belong to the lie? And people are familiar with the concept of the big lie. Well, Family of Secrets is the big truth, and I think people need to resolve to disseminate that big truth. We've spoken about Family of Secrets. Tell them about Who, What, Why.
So whowhatwhy.com. We are a nonprofit. It's an investigative news and analysis site on the web. We try to post new things each day, and we're trying to build this up into we want to be the new mainstream media, actually. We want to train a whole new generation of reporters reporters. We want to bring back a lot of the best reporters who were laid off. We want to bring them in. We have them work together on exciting projects on a day-to-day basis.
Very good. So Who, What, Why, and Family of Secrets, there is a very, very good start. This concludes Side 2 of For the Record program number 743, Interview with Russ Baker. This is being recorded on May 27th of the year 2011. For Russ Baker, this is Dave Emery saying thanks for listening.